Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast with Phil Pringle. Phil is the founder and senior leader of C3 Church Global, a family of over 500 churches around the world. We're passionate about bringing you fresh, inspiring devotionals to fuel your day and insightful conversations on all things church and leadership. And it all starts right now.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us. We are back for our second session with Pastor Adam and Kira Smolcom from San Jose, the west coast of America and California. They're doing a fantastic job with 10 campuses, and we're talking all things multi-site with them today. Welcome back, Adam and Kira.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Fantastic to be here. Look, just want to go on into the selection of the location pastor. Now, this we have found is crucial for the success of the location, the multi-site. We planted a lot of churches over the years out of our congregation, and I would scan the congregation, scan the college, and I'd say that guy or that couple will be perfect for planting a church. And I'd think of a place, God would guide us and we'd send them off. And I found that if you do that, with locations, it is as good as the other was, it can be just as bad. It is a terrible idea. You do not want that kind of personality for a location. So we've had to make a distinct difference between a location pastor personality and a church planning personality. Can you talk to us about your experience in this zone?
Yeah, I mean, I think I completely agree with you. The almost in a way, the church planner presents themselves. They're the ones, you know, biting at the bit to do something, asking for money and ready to go. I think the campus pastor, you have to convince to a degree about what you see in them.
That's a great difference.
You know, and coax them into it. Just call them, you know, into it. And I think you really want that humility of you know, self-awareness matched with a deep conviction of not wanting to leave, you know, the house, because they're so bought, right, sold out to the vision. I think what gets them across the line is they're extending the vision and you know, the purpose of the house at a greater measure. That's usually what gets them over the line. And I think that's a unique skill set, right? Campus pastoring is, you know, they need to be a high level leader. They need to be intelligent, effective communicator, but they also need to have a real sober love for being a part of something, not just out there on their own. And that's a real unique calling.
It is. And I think it's unfair to expect from some people to be what they're not. I think it's always, you need round pegs and round holes. You've got to help people find their sweet spot. Otherwise, they will be a very frustrating person. I would be a terrible location pastor. I would give, so would you. And I think that you're going to be a terrible person in one circumstance and a brilliant person in another circumstance. Now, we've got location pastors, and it would be terrible to send them off to try and plant a church because they're just not wired up for it. We might think they're fragile, but it's just not their wiring. And whereas we might try and put a guy who's a driven ego, high ego, high achieving, A-type personality, you're not going to help. He's not going to be a location pastor. He's going to be doing his own thing within seconds and frustrating the heck out of everybody. And people will think he's a bad person, but he's not. It's just a mispositioning. So when people are positioned correctly, they're going to be the best version of themselves.
Yeah, you're right. I think you got the two types of personalities, right? I think the campus pastors really love to fill the gaps. They love to, you know, present the gaps and they start filling it.
Yes.
As a lead guy, you're a gap maker. You got to love making gaps. If you're intimidated by gaps, you're in the wrong business to be a lead pastor, because your job is to keep exposing gaps and making gaps. But I think a campus pastor, they love to give me the gaps to fill. And when you can find those people, it's really easy to identify in many ways what their fit is, plus, you know, a lot of leaning into the Holy Spirit.
Totally. Now, do you think there's a divinity in size, that some people are gifted to have a location or a church that is going to reach a certain size, or do you think we can actually increase people's capacity and potential beyond that?
You know, Kieran and I talk about this all the time because, you know, every campus does seem to have, you know, its different struggles, sizes, breakthrough moments. I feel like instead of putting it on the person that they have a size, I always wear the responsibility on me and my leadership ability to coach them through to a new level. I think, you know, you've got to look at your team, and then there's got to be, you can't just disconnect your leadership incapacity at times to take a church further forward and just put it on them. Like, oh, they're just a 300 church leader. What can you shift in you as the high level coach to coach them to a 500 level? Can I give them more resources? Can I put them through more training? Can I maybe identify some skills they need to develop? Because I don't know if I want to rest at the fact that that's just who they are. I want every church multiplying. I want every church planting churches or planting campuses. I want to see them, because that's the fruit of a healthy church, is its multiplication, not just, I guess, sitting stagnant.
Yeah. So I believe that that has its roots in discipleship. And discipleship begins with one person impacting another one person. And every one of us are called to be disciple makers, not just to be disciples. In fact, I don't think you can call yourself a disciple unless you can identify somebody in your world that you're engaged in mentoring or disciple making. And that doesn't have to be for their entire life. In fact, it rarely will be. I think it's for a season. Sometimes that season might be short. It might be 3 months. Other times it might be 3 years. It might be 30 years. But there's going to be people in our world that God gives us that we're to be multiplying ourselves through. And part of disciple making is making our disciples disciple makers themselves. So out of that culture, our churches become disciple making churches. We actually reproduce and create another church. And I think that in our own personal worlds, the need for disciple making in this world that we live in right now is a premier, it is a priority, simply because of COVID-19 and all the implications there, where people who have been in isolation and lockdown, for many, their Christianity has fallen apart. They've just gone back to old habits and they've become depressed, and they've been a churchian rather than a Christian, maybe. Maybe they've, because without church, and we're in danger of preaching churchianity instead of preaching a discipleship message where I'm going to follow Christ no matter if the whole world doesn't. I've made my decision, no turning back. And I think getting that ruthless commitment to Christ and then imparting that to others is the future of the church.
I agree with you. And I think that essentially it would be a one-dimensional view to just see the success of a leader based on the size of their congregation and miss the fact of how many leaders have they developed and discipled and sent out to start locations.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. I think, talk to us, Kira, about this idea. I am a champion of the church and not just the large church. In fact, I probably am more of a champion of the 200, 300 people church, because that's what most of our churches are and most of our locations are. And it seems to me that it's not just about the divinity on the size of a congregation from God's point of view. The community are dictating to us. 300 is what I'm comfortable with. Big 2,000 people gatherings, I don't know. I just like the small community. And we find it here in Sydney that people just love walking barefoot in their board shorts with their three kids in their arm down to the local church that we've got in a community hall. And we got, hey, guys, we got the big flash screen. We got smokes and bands and choirs and shows and what have you. No, we'll just go down to this little 200 people congregation, because we want community and we want accessibility.
Wow. That's so true. You know, there's we find that that's synonymous here with us and our church planning. And I think people need that. They need community. They need to know that they are both giving ministry but receiving ministry. That's being the church. And I think in those smaller settings, you get more of a tangible expression of that. And that's what you're talking about. Discipleship is touching every facet, every sphere of my life. It's not just turning up on a Sunday and discipling me just in the Word. It's praying in significant moments. It's being there to help me raise my children. It's giving me a word in season. It's all of those things. It's delivering a meal and sitting down and having a glass of wine together. All of those things are so important when it comes to, you know, discipleship.
Don't get me wrong. I love the big gatherings. I love getting in an auditorium with, 20,000 people. I've been in the Olympic Stadium in Seoul, Korea, with 100,000, and you're speaking in there and enjoying that vast crowd. But every week, people are thinking, I want community. I love the big splashy events. And, there are big churches that are designed to be big churches with having 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people in the auditorium every week. And we need these apostolic centers that pulse culture out through the body of Christ and throughout movements. And so I'm right into them. I'm just saying that I think they're more rare than obviously the common, and the facts bear that out. I just think that there is a hunger for community in our populations because people are isolated and lonely, and they just want to know, feel like I can connect with this crowd, with this group. Are you finding that in your multi-sites?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely find that in the multi-site. I think the trick is, how does a 200-person church be viable financially? How does it be effective in as it can be in the community beyond just the community of the believers? But how does it shift the city? How does it, start to shift policy and be a presence? I think it can be if you've got the spirit of generosity. I just think that the only danger is if the leadership is set and stagnant. I think if it's a season, hey, we're 200 and that allows us to be nimble, but can we launch more campuses of 200? Can we find the premium size that makes us effective before we get stale or get still? And let's just keep, pumping out leaders and releasing people.
I agree with you. And I think that we can keep on multiplying and multiplying. And if we keep it simple, it's good. There is the snag, and you rightly commented on this, viability. Because every time you hire a new hotel ballroom or a community center or a school hall, it's going to cost you a couple of $1,000s a weekend. You got to get all the equipment. You got to bring it in a satellite dish to beam in live streaming, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you do need a central hub that is either subsidizing and paying for all of that and helping that local get underway. We work at attempting to make every location self-sufficient, though, so that they have a vision. That's part of the vision for that. Now, I wanted to just go on to the next topic of just you telling us what your vision is. How that breaks down into your goals. You've gone to 10 multi-site. So as the leader of the C3 movement, I'd like to know, but also as just for the sake of this conversation we're having about multi-site, how is your vision forming, or are you following what is happening? And just, that's one of my practices, is that I try to identify what is trying to happen and then help it happen. But there are definite initiatives that God has called us to take as well to actually make things happen and make something out of nothing. So talk to us about your vision.
I think for us, the vision is always been pretty simple for us. It's build the church.
Right.
And how do we build the church right. as effectively yeah. as we can? And I think in the early days, the reason we started multi-site was because it was the culture of C3. We had a big mm-hmm. vision from you mm-hmm. and we had a lot of churches that we needed to reach. And so we thought, let's chip in, let's start stretching. I think as that's grown, we've recognized the effectiveness of how that grows the church across the globe. And so, you know, finding cities that are, I guess, missing our piece in it, you know, our flavor, our brand specifically, and saying, well, we need, it's almost like a, it's like a leadership responsibility almost that you feel to go, hey, okay, while we've got energy in our bones, while we've got the resources, if we keep giving, God's going to keep pouring in. And if we keep stretching, I think the moment we get still, we're going to start to see, I think probably the energy dwindle and yes. The passion start to pause a little bit. Yeah. But I think it's just that vision to keep releasing. As I think if we keep creating gaps, God's going to provide the men and women, the leaders, to fill those gaps. And we never have the leaders, Pastor Phil, before we launch. They always come out after we make a decision to step. Then God reveals the resources.
That's
and
incredible.
The people and all those things, you know?
That's incredible. That is such a step of faith. So you say, we feel we want a location there. Let's go start it. And then, boom, a leader is revealed.
Yeah. Well, really what it came out of was pretty clear. We're in the C3 movement and we see this is the culture, plant churches. Let's
right.
plant churches.
Right.
And we saw...
Right. It's in the DNA.
It was in the DNA. And we saw that, you know, we're starting our first church in Palo Alto. People were so amazed at the speed and how quickly things happened. We thought, well, what if we did this every year for 5 years? Because that's as far as I could...
Fantastic.
That's as far as I could envision, 5 years. At the end of that 5 years, having launched one campus every year, I was just musing with God and just wondering, like, how did you do that, God? I mean, is it the fact that it was one every 5 years, or God, could you do that in 1 year? And just that thought, imagine if we just accelerated, did five in 1 year, and that's how we did it. We just launched out, made a commitment. The deal was this: if the church are able to give, then we'll do it. So we set an amount and the church gave. So that caused us to now have to do it. And that just created so much gap for gifting people. Because it's not just the church planters. It's the systems. It's the main, it's the, all the back end systems at the central location that have to facilitate this. The culture manuals, the cadence, the travel, all of that components. It's a chaotic wild ride that you don't know anything about until you step. And I think if you knew what it would take, you knew, you would never step in the first place.
Right.
I think God in his kindness reveals it along the way.
Totally, totally. So we have found that technology, we've had to master it at another level. We were into it before COVID, but obviously all of us have had to step up. And I would say all of our congregations. I mean, how many more people now are giving online? How many more people now are looking in their devices for content and teaching? And that's got more upside than downside, but it does have a downside. So to what extent are you using technology in communicating with, preaching to, maintaining culture and delivering content to your teams and your people in your multi-site?
Yeah, I mean, that technology has, I think it's just based on the fact that we started in the Silicon Valley. We have got very techie people who from day one knew far more than I ever did, and just releasing them. When we're in Newcastle, Australia, in our church there, we could have a tradesman dime the dozen who could build anything you need physically, but we go to the Silicon Valley, we can't even get a stool built.
We couldn't get anyone to build an Easter set.
And yet a website or an app or anything,
we
get developed within a week. So I think as far as communication, that's always been there. What I'm more excited about now is technology in helping the church revolutionize areas of serving and a different model and approach to the way that we do teams and volunteering. And rather than just a leader saying, hey, I'm going to roster you on this role for the rest of your life, how do we actually use technology to help people discover new gifts and new talents outside of a pigeonholed area that they've been in?
Fantastic. So how are you doing that?
I mean, we've got guys that are developing pretty much church software right now, tech for church that that really gamifies church in the serving area. You know, you've got trophies, badges, apps that you earn through, I guess, diversifying your skills. Maybe you're trained on the coffee team, or you're trained on the parking lot, the guest experience. And each one of these areas actually give you, you earn a badge, so to speak, on your profile that opens up so much more serving opportunity than just being stuck in an area. And, you know, that's where church burnout happens, right? I'm forgotten, I'm lost, I'm just expected to be in this area. What if we put, you know, a lot of incentive in your hand to be self-growing? And I think that's where technology really opens up the door that we've never had before.
Yeah, it's a fine balance. Okay, so let's come to a close in a couple of minutes. But it's a fine balance, I always find, between asking people to serve, because it's essential that every Christian does something. They've got a gift. And if they don't serve, they're going to have a frustrated Christian spirit within them that is aching to be like a river to pour out. And if they don't, they'll stagnate and that water turns sour on the inside of them. So it's very important that as a pastor, I have no apology in calling people to actually serve. On the other end of that, though, you don't want a culture of servanthood and honor and everything else be so heavy on these people's lives that they just go and go and go until they burn out and become disaffected and very disillusioned about the church. So I think managing and looking after our beautiful volunteers, these magnificent men and women who every week are doing something for God, and to appreciate them, to celebrate them, to honor them and to manage them so they don't go beyond where they should for the sake of their own health. I think that's a super important element of leading on the multi-site situation, because you're asking for so many more volunteers. And we can get pretty thin on the ground sometimes the more you spread out. And so it's important to keep raising up new ones and not burning out the people who are willing.
You're right. I think Jesus himself set that culture that the minimum level that you need to be at as a Christian is servanthood, because he said, I came to serve, not be served. So he set the standard for serving. That's the Christian, the whole goal of the Christian life is to serve others, serve the church, serve leadership, serve Jesus. And so ultimately, how do we actually, and on a large scale, Pastor Phil, I mean, in a small community, sure, you could know everybody's name and what they're doing from week to week and how long they've been in a role. But you go to a church of like Oxford Falls and other churches that are thousands plus, you don't have the privilege of knowing how long someone's been in a role and have they done four services a Sunday for the last 42 Sundays. And so we need to really shift up in a new era the way that we help people self-manage, the way that they output, and how can they keep increasing but not burning the candle at both ends, and how do they actually find energy? I find energy from serving. You aren't going to find Pastor Phil, Pastor Adam, Pastor Kira just sitting in church on a Sunday. Even if I'm a guest, I'm going to be doing something. And it's because there's energy from that. We refresh others. I think it's when people are forgotten in a role or they get lost in that role that they start to burn out. But if they can get invigorated from volunteering and serving because it's connected to their calling, and if we can develop systems that help facilitate that beyond our memory, I think we're going to be in a really healthy spot. That's the privilege of technology.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Look, just one last question. Kira, can I ask you, like, talking about burnout and all this sort of stuff, the last thing I ever want to see is guys like yourselves get to a place where you think, oh, I'm just so exhausted. And I've been there, because, and I've needed to have that self-management you're talking about at a higher level. But, you know, whatever I can do, you know, I think to help others not get to those places, it's important that we do. You've got three beautiful girls. As a family, how are you moving through this incredible vision that's expanding so rapidly?
Oh, look, Pastor Phil, honestly, we've had the greatest model in you and Pastor Chris. And one of the things that you mentioned to us years ago, which you probably don't even remember, is that the first thing you do when you look at your yearly calendar is you put in your family holiday. And so we've always had that benchmark in there. And our girls, they look forward to going to Honolulu. We're going to go there this summer and spend time as a family. And they love surfing with Dad and doing all those things. But we just make this so fun. They feel like they're on the front lines of ministry with us. We have rhythm. We have a rhythm of rest in our life so that we don't have to get to burnout. you know, and, you know, and then, you know, crash and burn. So our rhythms of rest are family nights. We have those every week. We make sure we have the holidays, and we make sure that there's joy in the journey. Like, this is fun. This is the greatest adventure ever. This is not dull or boring. This is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we've always taught, because you know, the person that says, I need to take a season off, and they're burnt out. Well, I realized you don't need a season of rest if you have a rhythm of rest. You know, I think
that's awesome.
You get that rhythm in your life of being rested all the time. You don't need to take a whole season out. You're always working from rest.
It's great. And I think if you've got that calendarized, that rhythm, then it's an objective thing. It doesn't, because there are times when I don't feel like I want to rest. I'm thinking, I don't need a day off, but I put it in the calendar, keep it holy, take the Sabbath, just do it. And you find that the next day you are actually in better shape for the fact. And taking long service leave, taking holidays are all extremely important. This is a very emotional job. You may not be physically tired, but emotionally and mentally, you are going to get drained. And it is important to refresh. And you can't do that in 5 minutes. You need to take the time in quiet and trickle charge, not on Netflix, but just in the trees, in the ocean. Hey, look, we got to close up. God bless you. So proud of you guys. You're amazing, and we love you, and look forward to seeing you stateside sometime soon.
Come soon. Yes, we love you.
We love you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the C3 Church Global Podcast. Let us know what you thought by leaving a review and connect with us on Instagram at C3 Church Global. We hope you'll be back real soon.